Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to the Purium Health Products Wednesday Night Consumer Education Call. My name is David Sandoval, and this evening I will be your host as we talk about what I think is a very compelling subject, and that subject is in honor of Women in History Month. Now, if I look to women in history, of course, there are many who are deserving of our praise. There are many who are who have led very admirable lives and that are consistent with our philosophy. And the reason I chose Ann Wigmore is because she was my mentor. She was a woman whom I modeled much of my food philosophy after. She is a woman with whom I have particular reverence, admiration, and have tried to do as she instructed as a teacher. And that having been said, I can compare Ann Wigmore to other great women in history. The two that come to mind are Mother Teresa, because just as Mother Teresa was a woman who gave people dignity at a time when they had none, and that was at death. She helped them to have a dignified death. Ann Wigmore actually saved people from the indignity of death by disease. Now, for those of you who don't know whom Ann Wigmore was, I am going to tell you a little bit of her story. And the other person in history whom I would like to compare Ann Wigmore to is Eleanor Roosevelt, because Ann Wigmore was a person who overcame difficulties in her lifetime. She saw a picture that was much bigger than the people who lived with her, her contemporaries, were able to realize. She was a much greater figure in history than the people who lived with her and walked with her ever could have known. And most importantly, because the words that she left behind have touched so many lives in such a positive way, I can, in fact, compare her to Eleanor Roosevelt as well as to Mother Teresa. So to Anne, this evening, in honor of you, I hope that everyone will, if they do not know about this person with whom we will speak about, then after tonight, you not only will know, but you will feel compelled to share her story with others, because, as I said, she inspired me, and I hope that I, in turn, can inspire you, and you can pass it along, and the chain can go on and on. Now, in my book, I have written about Anne, and I talk about the fact that she was the world's best-known promoter of a diet composed primarily of raw food. And most importantly, though, she was a proponent of living food. Now, if you read my Monday Morning Health Minute, you could ask yourself, if you have not read my Monday Morning Health Minute, you may ask yourself, well, I thought living food and raw food were the same. Well, they are quite similar. In fact, all living foods are raw, but not all raw foods are living. And one example of that, as I noted, was when you take something like a sunflower seed. It's very good, but when you sprout that sunflower seed, it's better. If you take buckwheat, the grain, and make bread out of it, I'm sure that buckwheat is good as a grain. I'm sure of it. But when you sprout buckwheat and make the young buckwheat lettuce, it is even better. When you take wheat seeds and sprout them and make wheat sprout, or to make wheat grass, they certainly are better. And when you take something even like soy, which I typically would recommend that people not eat, but if it is organic and fermented or sprouted, then I do believe that it then loses the chemical portions which make it undesirable as a foodstuff. There are so many instances where a living food is different than a raw food, and they almost always come in the field of seeds and grains and beans and legumes. Let's take beans. Without soaking them, they're hard to digest, and we know they cause intestinal difficulties. But when the beans are soaked before they're cooked, when they are made alive, even if they are then cooked, they're always better than if they start raw. And the only exception would be black beans, which do not improve because they do not germinate. And it is the germination of the bean that changes its protein to be much more digestible and better for the human body. So even when we ultimately cook food, having made it alive, not just raw, before it was cooked, makes it even better. So I hope that that is at least a list of common foods. And if you're asked why, why would a living food be better than a raw food? Well, the truth is that a raw food, when it is a seed or a nut or something like that, then it is going to be in a sort of dormant stage. It's going to be sort of hibernating, if you would. And only when you wake it up with water, only then do you start to activate its ability to grow. And when it begins to grow, thousands of enzymes come to life. And the life force that we call chi, that we call prana, that we might refer to simply as energy or life force, as I first stated, is present in a living food but is not present in a raw food when we're talking about that particular group of foods, seeds and nuts and grains and beans and legumes. Those are always better when they are alive versus raw. And I hope that that will answer the question. And again, the reason being, they are more digestible, they have more enzymes, they are simply better for you in every way when they are made to be alive. So Anne Wigmore, she is the mother not only of wheatgrass, but also of the living food lifestyle. And she imparted this knowledge to me many, many, I'll add another many, years ago. And I wanted to honor her this evening. And so when she was actually in Lithuania in 1909, she was born prematurely, and she was abandoned by her parents. Her grandmother rescued and raised her, not unlike my own life, although my parents didn't abandon me. My grandparents simply did help raise me due to difficult circumstances. And they taught Anne what they had learned about natural healing from the old country. Now, during World War I, Anne watched her grandmother use herbs and wild weeds that she gathered in the fields to restore the health of wounded soldiers. After the war, at the age of 16, Anne moved to the United States to live with her mother and father, who had earlier abandoned her. And she began to eat a typical American diet. And she ended up first with colitis, then colon cancer. Headaches and arthritis were very common in her daily life. And then, as if that wasn't enough, a tragedy struck. She was in a car accident. Both of her legs were shattered. The doctors advised amputation. And, of course, Anne was frightened. She was scared. She took advice from her grandmother in the old country. She said no to the doctor's recommendation, and she returned home, resolved to use the original diet of vegetables, green vegetables, seeds, sprouted seeds, and grains. More specifically, she began the regimen that would come to be known as the living food lifestyle, having primarily wheatgrass juice and sprouted seeds. Now, when her body healed, she had enormous cravings for all things that were rich in life force and chi energy. This is all very well documented, that her legs, the gangrene in her legs that had developed after the accident, which is a detail I may have failed to mention. The reason the amputations were recommended is because a botched surgery to repair some of the damage done to her bone structure left her with gangrene. And the gangrene was so bad that they recommended amputating her legs. After the regimen of green food, she not only healed from the gangrene, she also healed her legs and eventually would walk again. Her colon cancer clearly went away as she lived to be a ripe old age and only died due to a tragic accident. And, of course, all of the symptoms of colitis and headaches and things like this went away as well. So Anne, in her own life, proved that the advice of her grandmother was quite serious in its impact on the human body. And so as a result of that raw living diet and that startling change in her own health, the injuries healing, her chronic diseases gone away, her hair changed from gray to its natural dark color, her vitality was so high that she started a living food crusade way back in 1962, which happens to be the year that I was born. By 1963, she had founded the Hippocrates Institute. And the Hippocrates Institute was the first institute that was opened in the hope that people with hypertension, cancer, diabetes, obesity, asthma, gastritis, stomach ulcers, pancreatic cancer, liver disease, glaucoma, eczema, constipation, hemorrhage, colitis, diverticulitis, arthritis, it doesn't matter what people's afflictions were. Over a period of several decades, thousands of people came to Anne. And she was a doctor in the truest sense of the word. She was a healer who never did more harm than good. Now, right about 14 years ago, Anne died. She was almost 85 years old. She lived a long, healthy life, at least the second half. Against all odds, really, she lived. She would still be alive today, I believe, if it wasn't for that tragic fire. The clinics based on her teachings have been open throughout the world. There are 6 U.S. locations and over 90 locations worldwide, including India, Australia, Sweden, Finland, and other countries, including Mexico. Well, the bottom line is that I knew that we needed to build a bridge between the protocols that Anne taught me and the lives that most people were actually living today. And I knew that the story that Anne told me was one that would guide me, and so I want to share it with you. I was in communication with Anne, and I told her how much I admired the work that she was doing with people whom were otherwise given up on by doctors, their families, society, how she gave those people back their lives most of the time. But I also know that when people come to you at the end of the line, we're not God. We can't wave a magic wand. We can't simply, you know, make their diseases go away. We have to hope that through teaching them and through the application of raw living food, that their bodies will respond and heal themselves. And while the instance of that happening is so, it is so common, there is also the times when it is simply too late. And I told Anne that working with people in such a diseased state, I wasn't a doctor, I wasn't prepared for this, that I would need to leave that work to her, that I could not emulate her in that way. And she sat me down and she said, "Dave, I've got a challenge for you." She said, "I've got a job for you much more difficult than the job that I'm doing." And I thought to myself, well, then I can't do it because you're 10 times the person I am. And I could never do the job you're doing. So that would mean the job would be 20 times too big for me. And she told me, she said, "Dave, there's a road that leads people here to me. It's a long road. And by the time they get here to me, she said they are desperate. They're scared. They know they're in imminent death, or that death is imminent. So they'll do anything I say. They would stand on their head and sing an Irish jig if I told them that it would make them better. But Dave, when you go down this road, when you go back up this road where these people came from, the further back you get, the further you go, Dave, the less likely it is that people are going to listen to you. The less desperate they'll be, the less diseased they'll be. You see, Dave, it'll get harder and harder, but that's where you need to meet them. You need to meet them before they get here. You need to meet them before they need me. You need to meet them and you need to warn them that this is where they're headed if they don't listen to you. That's going to be your job, Dave. And I'll tell you, it's a job that I've taken very seriously. It's a job that I have done day and night, weeks into months, into years, into decades of my life, traveling back on that road, looking for people to tell them what she's asked me to help her do, which is to warn them that if they keep doing what they're doing, if they keep ignoring the signs, if they keep thinking that there will be a magic bullet to save them sometime into the future, that they're fooling themselves, that they're wrong. The results might not be that desirable. You see, since that time, in 1963, when Anne opened up the Hippocrates Institute, the incidence of death by disease, by cancer, and all of the conditions that she set up her life fight to protect people from, her life work, these diseases have actually grown in our society. These diseases have multiplied in our lives. They have not only multiplied, they are affecting a population that is younger and younger and younger than it has ever been before. We have more children affected with cancer, unfortunately, than ever before. But there are answers. I guarantee you that there are answers. Anne Wigmore inspired us. She left open the library of knowledge for us to enter and to read. And if they say that knowledge is power, she has armed us for whatever we might encounter. But we cannot treat the living food lifestyle. We cannot treat raw food. We cannot treat these life force green power foods as medicine. We cannot expect them to treat us once we are sick. We must embrace the art of prevention. We must travel back up that road ourselves in our own lives. We must try to avoid ever needing a Hippocrates Institute in our lives. And for that purpose, I have dedicated my life to studying green food, and I dedicated my book, The Green Food Bible, to Anne, among others. And in that book, I've described for you basically the programs that are offered at the Hippocrates Institute. I've shown you the diet that is made up of organically grown foods, fresh wheatgrass, fresh vegetables, and the sprouting of seeds. And when you look, I'll tell you some of the most important foods that Anne was using at the Institute. Of course, there was fresh wheatgrass served multiple times a day, 3 to 4 times a day. And that would be 1 to 2 ounces of wheatgrass served 2 to 4 times a day. Now, if you look at our bottle of green Kamut wheatgrass, it is the ultimate wheat, the ancient, non-hybrid, non-crossbred wheat. And we juice it, we standardize it, we guarantee that every serving is equal to 1 ounce of fresh wheatgrass in every way. So if you want to recreate the living food lifestyle in your life and you do not have the time, the money, or the dedication, or the space, or the resources to grow fresh wheatgrass juice, or to buy, imagine, 6 ounces of wheatgrass juice a day at $2 to $3 an ounce, you would go broke. That's why we allow you to do it for about $1 to $1.50 a day if you're doing 4 to 6 servings a day. We have bridged a gap. We have built a bridge between the living food lifestyle and its benefits and most people's ability to access them. When she told me to walk backwards up that road, I knew I couldn't go there with all of the protocols that she had because people weren't going to do it. I had to build that bridge. I needed to make it easy. I needed to make it cheap, because I'll tell you, what got people into this trouble was cheap and easy food. And I knew the only thing that was going to get them out was going to be inexpensive and easy food. But it had to be the right food, quality food, green food, raw food, living food, enzymes, alkaline, oxygen, life force. I needed to bring that into people's lives in the simplest form so they could take it out of a jar, mix it into a glass of water, spin it up, and know that it was 100% pure and raw and organic and live, just like as if they ate it out of the field. Better than a tray grown in a wheatgrass grown in a tray, grown in a hothouse, grown indoors and kept indoors. I believe wheatgrass is great in every fashion, but we needed to build that bridge and make it convenient, and we did. Another one of Ann's favorite tricks of the trade would be sprouting grains, germinating grains. Now remember, we spoke earlier about the fact when a seed is dormant, it is raw, it's like something you could grind up and make flour out of, mash up and make gruel, or grind up and make oatmeal, or cream of wheat, or something, pancakes, whatever it might be. But if you take those whole kernels and you submerge them in pure water, and then you rinse them, and you let the water fall through, and you leave them moist, and then you do that every 6 hours. And within 2 days, every one of those seeds will have germinated. And when they germinate, they begin to burst forth with the energy that will allow them to grow into an entire plant eventually. But more importantly, every seed will have the energy for 12 full days of explosive growth. They take somewhere between 12 and 36 hours to germinate, which means if you eat them within 48 hours, you have got all of the grains germinated, and they have not yet spent all of the 12 days worth of energy in order to become a plant. You see, nature does something brilliant, and this is why this is so important. A seed is susceptible to being completely, poisoned by its environment. If a seed, let's say, drops in water or drops on the ground, and then there's a cow patty next to it, and it rains, and all of the toxic waste from the cow's intestines goes onto the seed along with the water, then the seed's DNA might be mutated if those toxins were allowed to enter into the seed. But the seed has this special filtering methodology. It will filter the water and only osmotically let in purified water with no toxins. And then if any toxins are able to pass through, there's a series of elements within the seed that quickly spring to life. The minute that water enters into a seed, it becomes very much of a anti-food. It becomes antibacterial, antifungal. It will resist yeast and mold. It will have all of these things immediately spring forth once it's germinated. They're not there before it's germinated. They're there after it's germinated to protect it during those delicate first 12 days of growth that it will need to put its root into the soil. After those 12 days are up, the plant is on its own. It will then open up and its root system will be subjected, and its It will be subjected osmotically to everything in its environment, but during the first 12 days, it will use nothing from its environment except for water. Everything it needs to grow will be inside of itself. For 12 explosive days of growth, everything it needs will be packed into that little seed. So you plant a seed someday, or you put it in a paper towel, and you water it, and you wait 12 days. And after 12 days, see how big it is. And then you'll realize that if that little seed became that big in 12 days without using anything from its environment except for water, there must be a lot packed into that little seed. So I went through a long explanation to show you that Anne discovered that if you germinate those seeds, you're going to get that antiviral, antifungal, antibacterial, anti-yeast, anti-mold. You're going to get the explosive energy that it will take to build that plant for 12 days, but you're going to get it in your body once you sprout that seed. Now, where do sprouts appear in our products? Well, gosh, all you have to do is look at activated barley, the amazing germinated barley seed that was the food of ancient Romans, of Greek gladiators and Roman armies, the food that kept newborn babies alive when their mothers died at birth and the elderly and infirmed alive when they could not chew or digest food. This is because of the power, the energy that's in that germinated barley discovered 2,000 years ago or more by Greek and Roman physicians, ripped from the pages of history, brought to us. We are the exclusive purveyors of this product in America, and it is a phenomenal product. If you look into our daily fiber blend, you will find sprouted grains, ancient grains, quinoa, sprouted, amaranth, sprouted, spelt, sprouted, kamut, sprouted. These are ancient grains, never hybrid, never crossbred, containing abundant natural energy from, the fact that they are original. They are not crossbred, hybrid, or genetically modified. We sprout those and give you amazing qualities in a daily fiber blend product that is also containing other important seeds like flax seed and chia seed, a combination of sprouted seeds and of oily seeds. Again, combining raw and live in order to give you the best qualities of both. We took the lessons of Anne Wigmore and we moved them across the board in our product. She was a great believer in aloe. As you know, we are a great believer in aloe and have the most potent aloe available on earth. She believed in drinking carrot juice, and as you know, we have organic carrot juice mixed with rice bran tocotrienol, another one of Anne's favorite foods, was, of course, raw, pure organic carrot juice. And so when you look throughout our product offerings, you see wheatgrass, barleygrass, oatgrass, alfalfa. You see sprouted grains. You see germinated grains. You see, sprouted broccoli seeds. When you sprout a broccoli seed, as powerful as broccoli is, when you sprout its seed, it becomes 50 times more potent, 50 times more of the powerful anti-carcinogenic compounds that we value broccoli for. Things like phosphorothane and glucosinolates, they're the chemical terms for things that are found in broccoli seeds. And this is all documented in my book, The Green Foods Bible. Why did I write The Green Foods Bible? Well, because I was inspired by Anne Wigmore to go out and seek additional knowledge, to take the learning that she had done and to take it to another level, if you would. And so that having been said, I wanted to tell you about some research that had been done, a significant amount of research that had been done. And that research actually will prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, I believe, to anybody that we are not, making this stuff up, if you know what I'm saying. There really is a tremendous body of scientific evidence that shows that these foods that we're talking about, these green foods, actually do heal the body. Let me give you some examples. At University of San Diego, they took some human cells, they bombarded them with the radiation from 50 x-rays all in one day. And clearly there was mutation that was being seen, a breakdown of the DNA that had been damaged. They bathed those human cells, I believe they were mononuclear cells, in green liquid extracted from barley leaves, basically barley leaf juice. And under the microscope, they were able to see DNA actually repair itself. For the first time in history, they were able to see DNA repair itself. Pretty amazing stuff. Maybe proving that what Ann Wigmore had started teaching 30 years before this research was done really had some validity. Now, I would like to share with you the underlying reason why I believe that green food is, in fact, the most healing food on earth. I oftentimes say that it is the closest thing to a panacea, the closest thing to a cure-all, the closest thing to a magic bullet. Green food is the most healing food on the face of the earth, not because it is any better than, say, tart cherry or aloe, which are both superstars in the functional food categories. However, green food is the most healing because it's the most common thing missing. If you had 20 rooms in your house that didn't have light bulbs and you needed to light your house so people stopped tripping around and hurting themselves, then the most common denominator missing is the light bulb. Maybe the electricity, you could say, is more important, but you have electricity. So clearly what's most important is that which is missing. And that which is missing most in our lives that we truly need. One of the things that we thrive on, that our metabolism, our physiology, our very living essence at the cellular level is intended to have. And when we're missing it, things go wrong. And what we're missing more than anything else as a society, as a people, and that's a generalization because there are exceptions out there, but what we're missing most is green food. And so if you give green food to everyone, you will have a greater overall impact on the health of America or any other country, Canada, it doesn't matter, the human race. Because then and only then will you have addressed the deficiency. And until you address the deficiency, then you cannot solve the problem. So why are green foods so special? Why are green foods containing every known nutrient that the human body needs? Why are green foods a perfect food? Because they have the perfect balance of carbohydrates and proteins and minerals. Well, there's a lot of good things about green foods. The first thing is cereal grasses that Ann Wigmore was enamored with are different than every other green food. They're better than broccoli. They're better than even spirulina or chlorella in one amazing way. See, grasses are part of what they call the cereal grass, excuse me. The cereal grass family is what we call the Graminaceae family. And the Graminaceae family is unique because it starts as a seed, becomes a green leaf, which is scientifically classified as a vegetable by the U.S. government and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And that vegetable, at a certain point, is genetically predisposed to become a stalk, and that stalk will ultimately bear the very seed from which it came. Again, it's not typical for other foods, even seeding foods, seeds that bear, fruits that bear seeds, plants that bear seeds, the change from a grain into a vegetable into a grain again is creating a very unique opportunity, and here's why. This vegetable, this leaf of grass that looks much like the leaf of grass that grows in your lawn, just slightly larger, this leaf of grass will be affected genetically to convert itself into a stalk. And when it does that, thousands of enzymes are created by the plant which begin to break down and reconfigure proteins, carbohydrates, fats, and nutrients. And if we harvest those grasses at that perfect time called pre-jointing, before the plants have a chance to use any of that energy to make a stalk, before they have a chance to use that energy, we stop it. And we use it. We cut it down, we juice it, and we give it to you. Now remember that we first had the raw seed, and we germinated it, and we took advantage of this burst of enzyme energy, this burst of antiviral, antifungal, antibacterial, of anti-yeast, anti-mold. We took that protective quality and the enzymes that are rejuvenative, that are highly rejuvenative and reparative, and we took those and we sprouted the grains and we took advantage of that. But then we could also, instead of taking them at that time, let them continue to grow, become a grass, become a plant now with grabbing nutrients from the soil. Not just what's left in the seed, like we said, because for 12 days it will take nothing but what's in the seed. But you take the grass and you harvest it right when it's about to go into that jointing stage, when it's about to start forming that stalk, but before it uses its energy to do so, then you get the pre-digested nutrients from wheatgrass, barleygrass, oatgrass. And that's the miracle that Ann Wigmore learned about, that you could tap into that rejuvenative power. Well, here's the question that everybody's asking. Why would these grasses have that rejuvenative power? And here's the answer. These grasses perform photosynthesis, and I'm sorry if this sounds too scientific. I know most of you are following along just perfectly. Some of you are saying, I might need to look up one of these words. Trust me, every one of you out there is more than smart enough to understand everything I say tonight, because it's as simple as it gets. I just sometimes use big words when I don't need to. So let's just break it down simply. Sunlight is processed by plants that have the color green. That sunlight is the reason we exist on Earth. If plants couldn't process sunlight, then we wouldn't be alive, because when they process sunlight, they release oxygen. And it's the oxygen that we breathe that makes it able for us to live. Well, not only do plants produce oxygen because they process sunlight, they produce other good stuff. You see, imagine that your job was as a policeman and you were on the SWAT team, and so you had a helmet, and you had a flak jacket, and you had all these weapons to protect yourself, and you had a lot of protection in case somebody tried to hurt you as well, because that was your job. Well, chlorophyll's job is to process some really bad guys too, and to make something good come out of it. And so what chlorophyll does is it takes ultraviolet light and radioactive light that are very carcinogenic, that are very mutagenic. They're really bad for you. Ultraviolet and radioactive light are really bad for you. Well, they're not really bad for the plant, because the plant has created, like the SWAT team, it's created a number of defenses that protect them against the damage that could be done by these nasty things called ultraviolet and radioactive light. Things that would mutate our cells and burn us and make us get cancer, but it never hurts the green plant, because they've built these defenses. But they've not only built defenses, they built weapons. And those weapons don't like shoot out and harm the sun, but one of the weapons is ozone. It releases ozone, and the ozone rises up in the oxygen and blocks out that ultraviolet and radioactive light. That's one way. But it also knows that some of the radioactive and ultraviolet light's going to get through. And some of that ultraviolet radioactive light might actually damage the replicative ability of the green plant. And so not only does it have things that defend it, it has things that repair the damage done by ultraviolet and radioactive light. Why am I telling this story? Some of you might be asking. The reason I'm telling this story is because the beautiful thing that God and Mother Nature do for us, that Ann Wigmore helped us to discover, is that if a plant comes under a tremendous amount of stress in nature, it will have built defenses against that stress. Now, we suffer from mutagenic effect on our cells, and so Ann said, what food has the most anti-mutagenic properties? And that food is green food. So if you want your cells to stop functioning wrong, give them the fuel and the food that has the built-in defenses. It has all of the blocking, the suppressing, and the repairing agents that we call phytochemicals. Phytochemicals are nothing more than the things that are in plants. Phyto is a Greek word for plant. And nothing has more of those phytochemicals we have found in all of our research than green plants. And nothing has more in all of our research than red plants, like the tart cherry and things like blueberries and pomegranates. We know that those things that reflect sunlight, those deep, dark, pigmented foods, will have more phytonutrients, more beneficial compounds. But green foods marry not only phytonutrients, but enzymes, the life force that drives our bodies. So green foods contain enzymes that help our body digest and eliminate toxins. They contain enzymes that are antioxidant and reparative, like the ones I described to you, that are to help prevent the damage to our DNA and to repair cells that have been damaged, as demonstrated in the studies done at UC San Diego. So green plants are able to do what they do in our bodies because they're able to do what they do in nature. They're perfectly designed to process everything they encounter in nature, and they have the tools to help them do that. When we consume those foods, those tools become part of our metabolic reality, our metabolic functioning, and they perform those protective, reparative functions that they also were designed to do for the plant. Ann Wigmore taught us that. So again, green foods oxygenate the body, and our bodies need oxygen to thrive. Green foods create oxygen. Green foods alkalize our bodies. Almost everything we eat is acidifying. Very few foods have a powerful alkalizing effect. Green plants are one of those. Another reason why Ann Wigmore saw that green food is so integral at preventing disease is because disease is caused by over-acidity at the cellular level. And if you had a food that eliminated cellular acidity, then you would eliminate the damage done and the ultimate disease that starts there in that cell. So by alkalizing, by oxygenating, by opening up the channels by which foods are eliminated, toxins are eliminated, I need to share with you one study that will be very important for you to understand why green foods are needed. A research document showed that if you consume red meat 3 to 5 times a week for 3 to 5 years, your risk of developing colorectal cancer is significantly higher. Now, that's what they call the bad news. The good news is if you are smart enough to eat a really big green salad every time you had that red meat meal, your risk of colorectal cancer reverts to the societal norm, which means it reduces it that extra 200 to 300% that it would have been if you didn't. Now you're asking why, and I'm going to tell you. You see, when we consume red meat, we get red blood cells, almost identical to the red blood cells that we have in our own body. And so our body doesn't know what to do with this blood, and those blood cells break down and become highly toxic. They become highly toxic not to the entire body, but only to the delicate cells which tend to react to this toxin that are on the lining of our colon. And so the result is colon cancer. Well, here's the beautiful thing. Green foods, green plants have compounds in them called alkaloids. And those alkaloids are going to bind to the acids, the ureas that are created by the red meat. And they will guide them out of the body, not through the colon, but through the urine. And when they pass through the urinary tract, they are not harmful to the body. This, my friends, is the miracle of green food. This, my friends, is the brilliance of a woman who was inspired not by school or by scientific papers, but by the healing that she heard of from her grandparents, by the knowledge that came from the earth, by the humility that came from saying, I do not know, but I am willing to learn. And that, I hope, is an apt tribute to Ann Wigmore, because we have come to the end of tonight's call. I hope that each of you will be inspired to know that living food begets life. Dead food will beget death. And when you inspire your body with these green foods, these living foods, these sprouted foods, these foods that are brimming with chi, with prana, with life force, that you too will be brimming with chi and prana and life force. And just as a plant in the morning is ready for that morning sun, wakes up and is prepared for that day, you will be waking in the morning prepared for that day. Because green foods do way more than we were able to describe tonight. I have a free CD called The Healing Miracle of Green Food. I have my book called The Green Food Bible. And you can also seek out Ann Wigmore's book, The Wheatgrass Book, circa 1970. And you'll see that this knowledge from 40 years ago, when I was just a little tiny baby, that this knowledge that she was beginning to share with the world would change my life, would inspire me to share this knowledge with you. And in turn, I pray and I hope that you will find it compelling, that you will find it worthy, that you will too be inspired to share this knowledge with others.